Good morning, dear respected Thai, dear brothers, dear sisters, dear friends. I hope you had a relaxing and lazy morning. You can sleep in and feel more rested and enjoy the wonderful space that is provided for us to be in touch with our breath, with the trees, with the space. This morning we have an opportunity for a session of questions and answer. And a session of question and answer is a great opportunity to put into words maybe something we've been chewing on for a long time, but in regards to the practice of mindfulness, the practice of meditation, the teachings of Plum Village, as well as looking back into our way of life, our happiness, our suffering, and how to apply the practice into our daily life. So this is an opportunity for us to ask a question. We call it asking from the heart. We tend to come more towards the intellect, but here, everything in Plum Village, we always encourage us to always ask, how do we bring these teachings into our daily life? This is more important for us than philosophy. And we have children with us, so I'm actually very surprised that the children are here. I thought you would enjoy more laziness. And it is a wonderful tradition to have space for the children to also ask questions. So we would like to offer space for the kids to ask 3 to 4 questions. And a good question can benefit many of us. And a good question doesn't have to be long. It can be clear and simple. And we have our brother filming the session. But if there is any one of us who would not like to be on camera, you just have to raise your hand and our brother will know, and he will just focus the camera on the monastic. So this is something just for us to feel more at ease. If you would like to ask a question but not to be filmed, that is possible. And our practice, every time before we ask the question, we'll listen to a sound of the bell to come back to our breathing, and then we ask the question. So we would like to invite the children first. If there's any child that has a question, you are welcome to come up and sit on this chair and breathe with us, and then you can ask your question. Do any of you have a question? We do. Dear community, this is the first question, and our friend will first ask in Italian.
Ma perché se noi abbiamo qualcosa che ci piace e vediamo qualcun altro fare qualcos'altro che forse a noi non ci piace, però che lo fanno tante persone, noi ci mettiamo a fare quella cosa?
Okay, I will try to translate and Giacomo can help me if it's not correct, because I think you speak English quite well. Okay. So I think the idea is we know what we want, what we like to do, but then we see others do something that we don't approve of, we don't like what they're doing, and somehow, how come that we end up following that, doing what they're doing, even though we actually don't agree with that, we don't like it, but we end up doing it. Is that good enough? Okay.
Do you need translation?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you. That's a great question. I think we could all ask ourselves that question. We could ask ourselves that question at the level of our whole planet, really. Why, when there are things that we know that we don't want to do or that we don't like, but we see that society is going in that direction and we end up doing it as well. And that can happen with a group of friends, or it can happen in the choice of career that we make, or how much money we think we need, where we think we should live, the kind of lifestyle we think we should have. It's all kind of the similar problem, that we get pulled into things that at some level we don't feel like we want to do it, but we find ourselves doing it anyway. So, I think the first question that I would ask, so you started by saying that we know what it is that we like to do, or we know what we want. I'm not sure that that's true. Right, because we kind of know, but do we really know? Do we know with a kind of power, with a strength that would be enough to stop us getting pulled into things that we don't want to do? Right, so we know a little bit, right? But could we make that more clear? What it is that we want to do and what it is that we do not want to do. I think that takes contemplation. That's in a way what meditation can be for. That our teacher, he used to ask us to go and sit in the quietly in the forest and ask ourselves the question, what is my deepest desire? What is the thing that I want most of all? Because when we know that really clearly, then it makes it much easier to say no when other people are trying to pull us into something. So that's the first thing. Do we really know what it is that we want to do and what it is that we don't want to do? And then the second thing is that there's a kind of struggle in us, there's a competition in us, because we like two things. We like to do the thing that we want to do, but we also like to be with our friends. And we like to feel connected to others, and we like to not stick out, you know, not to be left out of the group. So if there's a group that's going in a certain direction, there's a very strong part of us that just we want to be part of the group. Even if sometimes they're doing something that we don't really want to do, but you see, there's two different pulls. One is like, I need to be part of the group, and I'm in danger if I'm not part of the group. But that's a very old feeling in our bodies, because for a long time, maybe millions of years, if we didn't belong to the group, we just wouldn't be able to survive. We would die. So there's a need, really strong need for us to be part of the group. And when that need is in conflict with this other part of us that says, I don't want to do what they're doing, it's difficult. depends which one is stronger. But I think it helps just to know that. So you probably, I mean, you're here, we're all here, we've heard about the energy of mindfulness, right? La consapevolezza, you know, the energy that allows us to be aware of what is going on inside of us and around us. So that is the capacity to recognize, oh, I want to be part of the group. You see, when you can see it and recognize it, you also have a little bit more freedom, because you can say, yeah, I know, I hear you. I hear the part of me that wants to jump in, but I am also able to say, no, thank you. And to, and you know, sometimes in a group, when there's one person who says no, who says, actually, I don't want to do that, then maybe there's two or three or four other people in the group who also feel uncomfortable. And once that one person has said no, they can also say, actually, I also don't want to do that. And suddenly, the whole group can change direction, because one person had the freedom and the courage to say no. So if you know how to generate the energy of mindfulness, and you kind of, it's like you are watching what's happening around you, but you also have a part of you which is watching what is happening inside of you. It's like you have an eye, you know, tracking, like, oh yeah, I want to jump in, but I also don't feel comfortable with, you know, with what we're doing. And then you get to choose. Because otherwise, you jump in before you even know, right? It just happens, and then later, maybe the next day or a week later, you go, oh, actually, I didn't really want to do that. But when you have the energy of mindfulness, you have more time, you have more freedom to choose. And then maybe many other people in the group will thank you later. You say, I also didn't want to do that. And thanks to you, I also had the choice to say no. And maybe as a whole society, we're a little bit like that. We rely on a few people who are willing, who have the strength and the awareness to say no to the current, you know, that is taking us in the direction of destroying the planet and causing suffering to each other. Maybe if a few of us can see that and say, actually, we don't want to go that way, and then others get to also say no and go a different way. Thank you for your question.
Est-ce que les plantes ont un système nerveux? Par exemple, est-ce que quand on casse une branche, ça fait mal à l'arbre?
Do the plants have a nervous system? For example, if you break a branch, does it hurt the plant?
Yes. Peut-être.
The quickest answer is we. Yes.
So I can add a little bit. So I would say the answer is yes and no. Because they don't exactly have a nervous system like ours. Right, there's no central brain, you know, where all the nerve impulses arrive. And it's been a question in science for a long time. And most scientists have said, no, plants don't feel anything. But it's changing. So in recent years, there are a few scientists who are finding evidence to say that plants do feel, and we still don't really know exactly how. But we know that there are electrical signals that are passed through the cells of the plant. All the cells are electrical in nature, just like nerve cells. They're not exactly like brain cells, but they are similar enough that there's a Spanish scientist who really believes and has good evidence to show that plants can feel. And one of the ways that they can test this is by using anesthesia. So you know when you, if you have to go to hospital to get a surgery, to get an operation, they give you an injection or a gas that makes you fall asleep so you don't feel any pain, right? And so for a long time, everybody thought that only works on human beings and animals, but they've now shown that actually plants respond in very much the same way to anesthesia, to being put to sleep. So this is all very new research. So you ask a very good question. And you could make a whole career as a scientist out of trying to answer that question. But that's answering at the level of the head, right? But there's also an answer at the level of the heart, which is, I think, the answer that Thay Phat Phu gave, and which I think is the answer you already know, right? That we feel that it's not, this, we don't feel comfortable to just hurt or to break a plant for no reason. We feel like maybe we should respect them a little bit more. Maybe we should care for them a little bit better. Maybe we should not be so sure that we are the only ones who can feel things. Because it's, if we're very sure, then we do things, we can cause a lot of harm, we can be very careless. But if we're not sure, if there's a part of us that says, I wonder if the tree feels it when I break the branch, then that little space of openness, of I don't really know, maybe the tree feels something, then that might make us more careful. And not only as individuals, but collectively as a species. And I think there's a kind of awakening happening in the whole of society. There are more and more people waking up to the kind of suffering that we may be causing to not just the animals that we kill to eat, but also to the trees that we cut to build houses, to build this meditation hall, the paper that we use in the toilet or to write on. And so maybe it isn't possible to live completely without hurting anything. It's actually really hard. So, but maybe there's a way to live where we cause as little harm as possible. We try to do less damage. Maybe we can't do no damage, but we can, I'm sure we can do less damage. Thank you. Thank you for your question.
One more question from the children's sangha. If there is no more questions from the children's sangha, you are welcome to stay, or you are welcome to go out and play I was told by the OT that there's no children program, but there's a lot of space. So feel free. And now we would like to offer space for the bigger children. If we have questions from the heart, you are welcome to come up, just like the children, to ask your questions. So, to all of us adults.
Okay, I'm nervous. A lot of people. It's a question that I have in my head for some months. It's about how to handle the suffering that is attached to it is a mental formation that has its beginning somewhere in the childhood with something that happened, something traumatic. Because it's different to handle emotion that always comes back. It's like never-ending circle or emotion that comes from something that happens at the moment and it goes away. I want a little advice how to do it, because it's for me confusing, because it's like to learn something that helps me to be happy or be in peace always, but without wanting that the pain goes away. So it's like a contradiction, or how to embrace it without get caught in it or hold it back. So the concrete question about it is this: how can I see when it's the moment that something that comes up needs to be embraced, or I just can let it go and concentrate on something else, on something beautiful? Or how can I see the point where I'm holding it back, on the difference, no, between embracing it or I'm stucking on it, and how to let it go, no, without wanting it to let go? I hope you understand it.
Thank you for your question. I will share from my own experience as a practitioner. I think first of all, we have to understand that meditation is not to get rid of any feelings. Meditation, we don't practice in order to just have one particular field of emotions and feelings that we make as who we are. But meditation, mindfulness, is the ability to stop, to recognize what is happening, what is present, to name it, to identify it, to call it by its name. And that is acceptance. And that, for me, a good word that I use, particularly with emotions and feelings that are very linked to childhood and experience, is to befriend it. To befriend that emotion, that feeling. We can have a natural reaction is trying to get rid of it or to run away from it. I've run away from particular emotions for a very long time. But like you shared in your question, it doesn't go away. The word that we use in our training is transformation. We can transform a seed, a feeling that we have experienced into another feeling, inviting another feeling to embrace and take care. Mindfulness is an energy that we can cultivate in order to befriend these emotions. The practice of our arriving in every moment is the present moment. The present moment is the place where life truly is, where we can invite that emotion to be present, to embrace it with our present moment of who you are. Yes, we have, I can say that all of us have suffered. Suffering is a noble truth. Suffering is something that we all can have understanding that can make us relate to one another. And suffering can also be a prison. Suffering, we can be attached to our suffering. And the suffering, what we tend to be attached to, maybe it's not particularly the feeling, but it's the story. Every time that emotion, that feeling comes up, that story is recalled. So our practice is to identify the story, recognize the story, embrace the story, but have the mindfulness of this present moment, that I am not in that situation. I am a new me today. And this new me has the ability to embrace, to recognize, and to tell the child that was wounded inside, yes, I have suffered. I have experienced such pain. But in this present moment, I have other energies that I can cultivate. Love for oneself, compassion, courage, solidity. And so in this present moment, by embracing this pain, we don't just get lost in the story, and we don't it's kind of like when we've been slapped, we're not being slapped again. But this time we are aware of that pain and we are telling ourselves that in this moment, I'm cultivating something new. So you are healing the child. You are transforming the child to live deeply this present moment. And this work is the work of transformation for the samsara, the cycle, to have an opportunity to stop. On a personal note, I've practiced for more than 20 years. Fear is a seed that is still very present in me. In particular situation, maybe if I meet somebody who reminds me of someone who offer a lot of pain to me, that seed of fear gets water. But now, as a practitioner, I'm not afraid. I can become aware of my body. Your body will have reaction to the fear that is channeled. The first place of mindfulness is the body. I come back, I recognize the fear. I know exactly where the reaction is coming from. I bring my mindfulness to those body parts. I calm the nervous system with mindful breathing or total relaxation. And in this moment of recognizing the seed of fear, I do tell myself, Papu, don't be afraid. You are much more than that emotion. You have many other wonderful emotions. And I channel, I call up the other emotions. I have confidence in my practice. I know how to breathe. Nobody can take that away. I know how to be present. I have trained, I have learned to recognize, to be myself, to be with my loved ones. I know how to do it. Mindfulness is also remembering how to be in the moments where you can be solid. So our practice of this present moment is training to take care and to heal the wounds. As a mindfulness practitioner, we have to also have the ability to know when it's enough to be with suffering. So we can be very ambitious as a practitioner. I'm coming in, the monks, the nuns, they tell me to recognize my suffering. Okay, I see it. And now I want to transform it all. Don't do that. It's a dark hole. Be generous and patient with yourself. For us, the practice is a path of transformation. It takes time. We have to also develop the joy and the happiness in the present moment, to also let the wounded child know that you have the ability to live happily in this present moment. Happily in this present moment is not to have something to be happy, but in this moment, I am present. I still have the ability to recognize the simple joy, the wonderful conditions that are there. Recognizing pain is a happy condition. Knowing what to do, what not to do. I hope that helps. Thank you.
Can I only say one thing more? I ask. So it's important not to identify with the emotion or with this thing, as I understand it. And to know that I can decide when I look at it and when not, no? Because it really was like you said that I told, okay, let's look at it, and I fall like years in this, no? If I understand it well.
Yes and no. To not be caught and just identify as one emotion, as one past story. Because we are a continuous stream of life. If we are just caught at one story, then we will feel and become a victim of that story forever. But our practice is to identify, yes, in this moment, I am angry. And that is just one emotion, though. But in this moment, I can invite and invoke other energies up to care. And therefore, you are more than that emotion. it's easily, because I've done this myself, feel very entangled in an emotion in a story. And I see myself as just that. But our mindfulness of coming home to oneself, we know we are much more than that. We are a continuation of our ancestors. We are a continuation of this earth. Sometimes I take refuge in land ancestors. I am much more than just this suffering. But also to also own our suffering and be responsible to transform it. Because I've met people, sorry, I'm going on a little bit long, sorry. I met people who become very attached to their suffering. And that suffering becomes a way to blame life and using that as an excuse. And our teachers shared with us that we all have the right to suffer, but it is our responsibility to transform suffering. This is it. Thank you.
This metaphor about gardening and nourishing our seeds helped me to understand and to cope, I would say, with my inconsistency, having both grown beautifully my seeds of generosity and greed, of welcoming, loving, and of anger, and so dealing with this source of having both parts and experiencing both parts. And okay, this is one big topic I am working on. But my question is about what is with my gardening, others' gardens? Because, of course, unwillingly, I also grew anger and pain and sadness and mistrust in people I love. And I think it's very convenient for me to say, oh, man, I'm a new Paolo. No, I'm in the moment. The past is the past. Don't worry. It's very convenient for me. But I understand that this is not so easy for the other, because the pain is not mine. So what can I do about pain that I generated over many years, maybe? And how can I deal with it today?
So dear Thai, dear community and dear friends, it's true that our mind is like a garden, and when we go to the garden, we may find beautiful plants that we love, flowers, trees, and etc. But we also will find grass, and we also will find the plants that we don't really like. But they are all there. This is one thing that we first have to accept, that everything is organic and they are all there, and they all can be transformed too. The place where the nettles grow can also if we want to change that area into flowers, it's possible. Yeah. But we also can allow the nettles to be there and see the goodness of it. So for me, for example, when I practice, at the beginning I thought that I can practice and take away all of the bad seeds in me and to have no more bad seeds, only good seeds. Yeah. And I imagine if I practice and one day I don't have anger anymore, it means I am emotionally handicapped. And I don't want to be like that. I want to feel alive. But in order to do that, I need to have enough energy of mindfulness in the present moment to recognize that I have something that is arising right now that I don't appreciate. That it can cause also suffering for myself and also the suffering for others. So that is why navigating our action is very important. First recognize what is happening in us and then we navigate our action. The fourth mindfulness training is very helpful to do that. When we recognize that we are in a strong emotion, we practice not to speak, not to act, but instead to recognize it and practice with that seed. Until you feel have enough calm, then you can start to communicate. Yeah. I think tonight we will learn more about that in the practice of loving speech. So let's say we have done the things that caused suffering in the past and it has become a burden for us to make us feel guilty, for example, and to make us feel like I have to take responsible for that. So in the practice, feeling regret is very healthy, which is, it is not good, it's not bad to feel regret. But that regret, if it has grown into burden for our mind, then it is not very good, not very healthy for us. So one thing we can practice is to change the direction of our guilt into an aspiration. Into the aspiration of practicing. So let's say when I get triggered and I can hold myself to say something to make people also feel painful, for example. If one time I feel failed, like I am not successfully doing it, I know that I can do it better next time. And I need to make a real effort to do it next time. Until I'm able to stop my speech, for example. That is already good enough. Because if we are not able to save the people in the past, we still can save the people in the present moment, and we can save the people in the future. But this moment is very crucial. To cultivate that aspiration, to practice that, to embrace that. And it's also not to be afraid of it. So when we practice like that, we also have self-compassion, that we have weakness inside, that we can still embrace. When you are able to be present for your loved one, that is already good enough to transform the past. We are making people suffer in the past unconsciously. It was because we don't have enough energy of mindfulness at that time. And now by generating energy of mindfulness and aspiration to do it better, we can do it. Yeah. And in our practice, we have a lot of method of practice, Dharma doors, we call it Dharma doors, like touching of the earth. Cultivating joy and happiness in the present moment, that will help us to be more attentive. Yeah. And in the practice, we should not be afraid of failure. There's no failure, actually. You just need to exercise and to practice. Yeah. Thank you for your question.
Can I add one thing? Is if we have hurt another garden, very simple but very difficult, apologize. Say, I am sorry. And why is it so difficult, even for us practitioners? Because we think we're right. And I shared this from my own experience of living in this community. We work with brothers and sisters 365 days. We smile a lot, but we also get angry at each other. And even in our greatest intention of doing things for the greater good, quote unquote, we will still make each other suffer. And my biggest growth as an individual is learning to say sorry without explaining. Every time in the past I've made someone suffer, I have a reason why I made them suffer, right? And we all do this. Our practice of the present moment, now I've learned when somebody expresses their pain and hurt to me of what I've done to them, my mind right away goes into the garden and say, yeah, but I give you good manure, you know, now you're a better person. And you find every reason to justify your action. And I've learned that that doesn't do me any good. It only feeds my own ego. It only makes the other person hate me more because I don't listen. And the biggest support and the biggest practice in that moment is to bow and to say, I am so sorry I made you suffer. Because what is real is that that person is suffering. That is real. That for me is what I have learned to accept. And our practice is to help remove the knot. We will hear the practice of beginning anew this afternoon. But this is the biggest practice of taking care of one's garden and each other's garden, beginning anew, to recognize the pain that we have offered, even from maybe a good intention. But your action has made that person suffer. And just to accept, you accept the suffering. Maybe in my critical mind, there's still a part of me, but I have to say that. I have to do that. But that's not important. That's already the past. The present is you suffer. It was my words. It was my choice of action. And I will learn from this. And I will reflect on these actions. And in this way, you offer the other garden understanding. Because when someone suffers, what they want the most, in my understanding, is to be heard, to be seen, and to be accepted. And as someone, if we are too proud of our garden, then we are not supporting and helping. We're just showing off. So as a practitioner, there are moments to come back to humility, to be humble, so that we know that we're not always right. And we still have compost that we need to take care of. That, for me, is bruising, it's painful, but it gives us an opportunity to continue to grow. That is the wisdom of nature, is that it's always growing, it's learning from its mistake, and the garden continues to bloom in its fourth season. Thank you.
More of a kid's question. It's a little bit concerning, this saying, a cloud never dies. And sometimes we have conversations with my children about death and reincarnation. And my son often says, I don't like this reincarnation thing because you're not going to be my mother in another life, and my dad is not going to be my dad, my sister is not going to be my sister. And it's difficult to have answers. Here we really feel that the body never dies. Kind of like the composting works. And reincarnation really talks to me as well. And also the heritage of our ancestors and the family line, you know, lineage. And it's kind of all blurry into something not clear. And I thought that maybe you could be clearer.
So I see if I can try to summarize the question to make sure we understood. So there's two types of teaching on continuation or reincarnation, rebirth. So in one type of teaching, it seems to be that there is something like a soul or a person that gets reincarnated, and that person has a kind of continuity, although their relationships might change. But it's that person that then appears in another body and so on. And then according to Thay's teaching, it's more, you said it's more like something more blurry, that we don't see ourselves exactly as a separate entity, a separate person that then gets reincarnated, because we are already all of our ancestors and all of our descendants, and we are the whole cosmos. So who dies? And who is reborn? So could it be more clear? I think it's quite clear. there's a part of us that that still doesn't quite trust or believe that we are already each other, you know, that we are already the earth, the stars, the entire cosmos, the past, the future. It's like, yeah, okay, I guess intellectually I kind of understand, yeah, interconnection, but why is it that I feel things that you don't feel? Or I see things from a point of view that, and you have a different point of view. We are different, right? We do seem to be different, and we seem to have our personalities and characteristics. So we're not identical, and yet we are, each of us, manifestations of the whole. It's very strange. It's okay for it to be strange. I think, of course there's a part of us that would like it to be clear. It's sort of explainable, simple. But I think that would be more boring. So I like to kind of rest in the mystery. And I acknowledge the part of me that wants to know, but I also see its limitations. So that part of me that wants to grasp and explain and in words, it's like this and then it's like that, it's kind of mechanical, you know, it's like, make a nice picture. I go, hello, I see you. You can rest. Take a break, because there's another part of us that doesn't need to resolve it, that that can dwell peacefully in the mystery. And I think my experience of it is that it's a much more alive place to be. And there's, and I think it's beautiful that at the heart of reality, at the heart of the present moment, at the heart of life, at the heart of us, there is something that cannot be grasped, cannot be explained. I prefer it like that. No? It's kind of like, it's so much more fun. If it was all explainable, you know, you could just write it down and then everyone, you'd be done, you know, be like, okay, well, now we know. What else should we do? It's kind of boring. So, yeah, for me, a part of the practice is to recognize the part of me that wants to know, you know, in that kind of way. It doesn't mean that we can't know, it's just another kind of knowing. Because we do know, we already know. But it's a different kind of knowing. It's a knowing that can't be said in words, that can't be grasped, but that can be experienced. And sometimes it's a little glimmer, it's a little flash of that knowing. You feel it. You feel connected. You feel at peace. And I think that is something that we can settle into. And there's words that can take us there to some extent or another, you know, or even stories or poems or, you know, why do we sit here talking, you know, if it can't be said? Why did Thay give so many talks, thousands of talks, kept talking about something that can't be said? Because it's not, I think if he did that and if we continue to do that, it's because it's not completely useless. So I observe what we're doing here now, and I find it very beautiful. You know, that we're sitting here, we're not looking at our phones, you know, we're not distracting ourselves. We're sitting here and there's something happening to all of us by the fact of sitting here together. Right? It's a bit hard to grasp what exactly is going on. Like, what are we doing? It might not be exactly what we think. Right? But I think the fact that we are sitting here, and maybe all of us, or maybe most of us, are aware of our breathing, aware of the sensations in our body, maybe noticing some discomfort, you know, in the present moment and accepting it. That's a kind of awakening for me. It's a kind of rebirth. I don't know of anywhere, my ancestors didn't do this 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. They didn't have a way to do this, to sit together in a room, to cultivate stillness, to cultivate awareness of their bodies, their feelings, their thoughts. And but now we are doing that, thanks to one man, Thay. You know, he was exiled, he lived in the West, and he saw that maybe there was something that we needed to cultivate a little bit more. And so that stream of wisdom and practice joined all of our streams of lineage, of culture, education, transmission, inheritance, suffering and happiness. So something is being awakened, something is being reborn, but I don't know if it really, it doesn't belong to any of us individually. We're all changing together, we're all transforming together. And I can't say that I understand it, you know, or that I can know it exactly, but I can feel that it's important. And you know, I can talk to my ancestors and I ask them how they would like to continue, what direction they would like to go in. And almost all of them, not quite all of them, some of them were still negotiating, but pretty much all of them, they're very, very happy to be here, to live like this, to do these things together. And I think it would be kind of sad if they had to just continue to be themselves, right? So the change and the fact that we inter-are is an amazing thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's what liberates us. We don't have to keep continuing the same patterns of suffering, of confusion. That we can also get beyond the stories of who we were and the pains that we experienced, and we can start to soften that and let that go a little bit and experience what it might be to live as a community, to live as the world, as the forests and the clouds. So, of course, there's still a part of us which seems to be very concerned with what happens to this body, these feelings, these thoughts. But from time to time, we get to experience something that stretches us a little bit, that goes a little bit beyond the immediate concern for this part of the whole. And I think I find that interesting. I find it kind of healthy. Now, I'm still going to do my best to take care of this bit, but I like to practice daily stretching, you know, the envelope of what I think I am. I find it changes my view in interesting ways, changes my priorities in interesting ways. To see, like, oh, what if actually I'm also the forest? What does the forest think? What does it need? What does it feel? Can I feel what it feels? Am I already feeling what it feels? Is something that I'm feeling actually not to do with what I think it is, but it's actually a manifestation of the feelings of the earth? I just misidentified it. See, so I find that very interesting, to experiment with my boundaries, you know, to kind of let them be more flexible. And I think Tai showed us that again and again and again, that of course, you know, he had his body and his feelings and his thoughts, a personality, one that we loved. But I could feel many, many times that he wasn't as concerned about just this part, you know, that the body, as you might think. He wasn't afraid. He knew, like, that part is only... He would sometimes make this gesture. He said, don't get attached to this, to the body, to the form. It's just it's the tiniest part of what I am. So even if our personality, right, gets reincarnated somehow into another body, it's okay. But that's not all we are. It's a very small part of what we are. So maybe it doesn't matter as much as we think. What happens to the little piece of reality that we identify with as self? And I find the many, many ways that we can apply the practice that Tai has offered us to experiment with being more flexible with what it is that we think we are. Like right now, we can sit here and think of our own individual needs and wants, and there's probably things that, you know, we want. We would like to feel better, less uncomfortable, happier, more peaceful. There's things pulling at us inside. But it's also possible to look around, to sort of feel into the space of the room, and to feel like, oh, there's something really interesting happening here. Why have a couple of hundred people chosen to spend their Thursday morning sitting still and listening deeply to each other and to themselves? I wonder what's happening. It's a very strange thing. I don't know how many parts of the world this is happening right now. How many places is this going on? Not many. I find it really interesting that there is something happening which we are a part of, but that we're not exactly doing. You see, we get focused a lot on what is it I'm doing, my choices, you know? But there's so much of our life which is not doing. Right? But we are co-being, co-manifesting. So, I don't think it's any clearer. but I think it's also okay.
Dear community, I think we have to end because we don't want to overtake our joyful and lazy day. There's just one part I want to share on my sharing is the sorry part, which was the first action of recognizing suffering. But if there is some misunderstanding about the situation, there's always a time and space to clarify, to come back, and to resolve any conflict that has been established. But it's not just, I'm sorry, and that's it. But if there is wrong perception, when we talking about the garden, if there is real wrong perception, and there is miscommunication, the practice is to find the time and space to communicate and resolve so that relationship can be reestablished. But normally when somebody is sharing their suffering, it's just very easy to get very defensive. And that defensiveness blocks the heart to connect. So that's where we have to be very mindful of our judgment and our righteousness also. And then we create space in order to resolve. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, dear friends, for being present, for listening with open hearts. Let us listen to Three Sound of the Bell together.